The spymaster had finally lost his cool and leapt out of his chair, punching the obsidian cage. It rattled, and the metal bar he hit even bent slightly from the impact. It also reacted like any electrified surface would when something conductive made contact with it. You have been shocked by a jolt of electricity. HP minus 25.
Motherfucker, that stung!
He cursed as he shook his shocked fist. Relatively speaking, the jolt was completely insignificant, but that didn't mean the sudden bolt of pain had been a pleasant one. Edward took a few deep breaths to calm himself. The answers were not an issue. He just had to ask the right question. Deciding to change up his approach yet again, he reached into his tunic and took out a rolled-up parchment.
Okay, look. Do you know this person?
He unfurled it in front of his prisoner, revealing the expertly drawn image of a stern-looking middle-aged elf woman. She had short, spiky hair and a deep vertical scar across her left eye. This was an artist's rendition of the culprit thought to be the main perpetrator behind the act, courtesy of Bernard Sampson's testimony.
No.
Again, not a lie.
Is this succubus, this snack, also your familiar?
Yes.
Did you tell her to disguise herself as an elf?
No.
The man kept going back and forth, exploring the possibility of the succubus pretending to be his suspect, but couldn't get any confirmation. He rightfully felt like he was on the right track, but Boxy had no idea that Zira had gone and done something like that. As such, Edward was completely unable to grasp the connection between the woman in the picture and the box in front of him and was forced to drop that line of questioning. He also considered the possibility of this succubus acting on her own, but he had no way of confirming that.
Do you at least know what happened to the city?
What city?
Edward took another deep breath. These endless questions were getting on his nerves. Normally his silver tongue skill would have his prisoners spilling their guts all on their own, but it seemed ineffective on this particular monster. The way it randomly ignored the context within the conversation was especially troublesome.
How was the city of Monotol destroyed?
It blew up.
Ah! Gah!
This was incredibly infuriating. Something about this moronic box ticked off the spymaster immensely. It was partly his own fault, though. He had briefly forgotten that his ultimate skill was not almighty and that open-ended questions like that last one were the skill's weakness. He had to stick to concise questions whose answer could be a yes or a no if he wanted to get anywhere. After rebuilding his composure yet again, he briefly thought back on what he knew about his captive. He had randomly stumbled upon a rampaging monster that, against all odds, seemed to somehow be connected to the calamity he had come here to investigate. The key to that event was bound to be buried somewhere in the creature's dim-witted mind, but Edward lacked the necessary details to ask the right questions. The animate chest had also shown to be capable of lying in order to protect itself, so simply asking about the how and why was likely pointless. What about a slightly different approach that didn't rely on just words? Granted, he highly doubted it would work on a monster, but it was still worth a try. The spymaster silently left the room, leaving Boxy all on its own. One would imagine this would be the mimic's perfect chance to make a break for it, but it did no such thing. It remained perfectly still, suspended inside its electrified cage. Of course it wanted to escape, to break free and to get away from that dangerous being that called itself a man. But it had no way of doing so. Boxy's MP was currently zero, and automatic MP recovery had been disabled. The cause was unknown, but that was its current reality. It had to admit, whoever or whatever was responsible for its imprisonment knew what they were doing, as Boxy couldn't do anything to escape without MP. Storage was inaccessible, acid spray was unusable, mend flesh was disabled, metal mimicry wouldn't function, and spells were right out. The only skill that still had a use was shapeshift, but that wouldn't let it break out of this specially prepared cage. How come it was always those insufferable grates that got in its way? Several minutes passed in total silence before Boxy once again heard the sound of a metal door opening in the distance.
"Please don't! I didn't do anything!"
came a familiar squeaky voice.
"You can't do this to me!"
"I can, actually,"
answered Edward's voice.
You are my prisoner, after all.
He appeared before Boxy once more, carrying Fizzy by the scruff of her neck as if she were a large bag. The gnome's work clothes were gone, replaced by a rough-looking brown poncho that covered her torso and upper thighs. It looked less like a piece of clothing and more like an old potato sack. Her arms and shoulders were bare, and her legs were exposed from the thighs down. Her bruised ankles and wrists were cuffed by cast-iron shackles and bound together by sturdy-looking chains that rattled forebodingly as she was swung about.
No!
She screamed the moment her eyes met Boxy's.
No! Get it away! Please!
She struggled desperately, waving her arms and legs all about and shaking her head.
Quiet down, prisoner, said Edward.
But that thing! It's evil!
She was thrown roughly to the ground, landing just centimeters away from the cage.
I said, shut up, before I make you.
The gnome whimpered in pain and curled up into the fetal position. This isn't happening, had been repeating inside her head over and over ever since she woke up in her cell. She wished she could at least tell her side of the story, but nobody was willing to listen. They didn't even tell her why she was here.
Better. The spymaster said coldly. Now then, you in the cage. Do you know this girl?
Yes.
The calm, oddly monotone voice made the gnome freeze and caused her manic thoughts to grind to a halt.
Is she important to you?
Yes.
What is this girl's relationship to you?
Asked the old man in spite of himself.
Was teacher. Now betrayer.
Fizzy looked up at the suspended monster despite herself. She wanted to retort somehow, but the words wouldn't come out of her throat. Objectively looking at it, that was exactly what she was. It also meant this creature, despite everything, had trusted her in some way. There could be no betrayal without trust, after all. She then curled up even harder to chase away those dangerous thoughts. Nothing good could come from thinking of monsters as anything other than heartless.
Teacher, eh?
As for Edward, his mind was already putting the puzzle together. Of course, he was well aware of what this gnome was capable of. The appraisal check she went through while unconscious made it clear exactly what her job and skills were.
So, she taught you the artificer job?
Yes.
Was that all she taught you about?
Yes.
Does her teaching relate in any way to the calamity of Monotol?
No.
Calamity?
Stammered Fizzy. Her thoughts started running wild again.
Oh?
Asked Edward, smoothly shifting his focus to the gnome on the ground.
You didn't know that this mimic was involved in that?
No, I had no idea.
Come to think of it.
The man's voice trailed off as he began searching through his notebook. He found the entry concerning the site of a smashed-up caravan that had been found on the Imperial Highway between Monotol and Erosa.
Here we go. Rory and Lark Fizzlespricket. Your family, I presume?
The gnome's eyes went wide when her deceased father and brother were mentioned out of the blue. Anger flared up in her heart at him for besmirching their family name like that, but she quickly quelled it. Pointlessly antagonizing her captor was a really stupid idea.
Yes,
she answered meekly.
Interesting. You know, we never actually found any of the bodies. You wouldn't know anything about that. Would you, gnome?
He considered the possibility of them being somehow connected to the calamity and faking their deaths to go underground. Surely they must have mentioned something to their only living kin if they had such designs.
Of course not!
Operative word being if.
What about you?
Asked the spymaster, turning to Boxy.
Did you have anything to do with a three-wagon caravan along the Imperial Highway north of here?
Yes.
Fizzy's eyes became even wider as she gazed at Boxy in complete shock.
Was this after the destruction of Monotol?
Yes.
He was convinced they were talking about the same thing. All merchant traffic going in and out of Erosa was logged. And that convoy was the only one that fit both the timing and the description. Well, it had taken a while to confirm this, since they never found one of the wagons, but the personal effects recovered from the scene left no doubt as to the owner's identity.
So you were at the site of that ambush?
Yes.
Did you come upon it before it was attacked?
No.
After the attack?
No.
Ah, so you happened upon it while it was already under attack?
Yes.
He scribbled some more details in his notebook while Fizzy listened intensely. She was so nervous she felt like her heart was going to leap through her skull.
Did you kill everyone there?
No.
She relaxed a bit.
But you killed some of them?
Yes.
Then panicked.
Did that include two male gnomes?
No.
Then came relief.
So they're still alive?
No.
Followed by grim acceptance.
Then where are their bodies?
I ate them.
That instantly turned into rage.
You bastard!
Screamed Fizzy, unable to handle this roller coaster of emotions. A boot forced her down to the cold stone ground. It mercilessly pressed upon her back, squeezing the air out of her lungs. It was as if a mountain had just sat down on top of her, robbing her of the ability to speak or even breathe properly. Although it did little to stem the flow of tears streaming from her eyes. She'd known they were dead, even if the bodies were never found. She just knew. But hearing that this creature had brazenly eaten them felt like the ultimate insult to their memory.
So they were dead when you found them?
Yes.
What about the adventurer escort? Did you kill them?
Yes.
Bandits as well?
Yes.
You ate all of those people too?
Yes.
Why?
Because they were there.
That was it. Nothing more, nothing less. Boxy was a monster. A creature that attacked others without warning and for little reason. The kind of thing that only saw the lives of others as an obstacle between itself and its goals. The metal door outside of the mimic's field of vision opened up once more, followed by numerous sets of footsteps. A squad of several armored guards stood in front of the spymaster and saluted him respectfully.
Spymaster Allen, sir,
said the one with the extra shiny hat.
We're ready for you.
Excellent. I think we're about done here. Show this creature to the site. I will be there shortly. And do be careful with the cage. Don't want to lose any fingers.
Yes, sir.
Edward picked the gnome up off the floor and left the jail cell to give the men enough space. Four men walked into the room and stared at the bizarre creature with looks of clear apprehension. One of them went over to the box that was stuck to the side of the cage, unlocked it, and flipped one of the switches on the inside. The electrical current coursing through the metal bars died down immediately. The cage was then picked up and carried out of the dank cell and towards the surface.
Where are they taking it?
Fizzy asked in a quivering voice once they had gone. Edward dropped her roughly on the ground.
Nowhere that's of any concern to you, prisoner.
Fizzy sat up and glared at the man.
Why am I even here?
You seriously don't know?
No, nobody has told me anything about it.
Why, it's because you have to pay for your crimes, of course.
What crimes?
Let's start with gross negligence that led to the death of others.
What?
Your incompetence sent that creature into a murderous rampage that not only cost the lives of at least 20 of the city's protectors, but also caused a riot that resulted in the death of 15 more civilians and dozens more injured.
What? You're pinning that thing's behavior on me?
Are you saying your rash actions did not set that chain of events into motion?
But what was I supposed to do? Some monster was messing with my brain.
Did you not think to hire adventurers?
Fizzy was struck speechless. Of course that had been the best possible solution. That much was painfully obvious now that someone else had pointed it out. Even if she was worried the guards wouldn't believe her words, there was no way sellswords wouldn't believe her gold. Dealing with monsters was their specialty, after all. If one thought about things logically, then, one could indeed say her failure to handle the monster had set off a dreadful chain of events. She refused to believe it, though.
I'm not buying it,
she insisted.
How is any of that negligence? If anyone's at fault, it's the shitty guards who can't do the jobs my taxes are paying them for.
It was a valid argument. Keeping monsters outside the walls or subduing them should they get in was the responsibility of local law enforcement. There was no way a peace-loving citizen could be expected to rationally handle a situation where they found themselves confronted with a monster. This victim-blaming nonsense that was being thrown at her was ridiculous, to say the least. Edward, however, completely ignored her protests and continued piling it on.
You also taught it a job without verifying its identity with an appraisal. Moreover, you failed to register yourself as a mentor, nor did you apply for the appropriate teaching license.
Okay, he had a point there. Those things were undoubtedly illegal, but the treatment she was getting did not match those administrative misdemeanors.
Then let me pay my fines and get on with my life,
she insisted.
And it is the result of my observations that I have found you guilty of colluding with a foreign power to knowingly and willingly spread chaos within His Majesty's territory.
With a completely deadpan voice, this human had just said the most ludicrous thing she'd ever heard. Fizzy understood at once that her imprisonment was never a matter of guilt or innocence, but simply this man's whim. And she couldn't do anything about it. After all, if someone in power wanted a commoner, especially a non-human like her, thrown in prison, then they could make up any myriad of reasons and nobody would bat an eye.
Why?
She asked with a shaky voice.
What do you want from me?
See, we have a good old-fashioned war brewing, and I would very much like your assistance with the war preparations.
As wondrous as they were, the vast majority of an artificer's creations were weapons. Instruments of death and destruction that could be used by anyone after a bit of training. It was a relatively young profession whose military applications had not been fully explored yet. Edward was quite keen to get ahead of the curve in that regard, and this pink-haired gnome was the perfect pawn to assist with unlocking that potential in secret. Granted, it wasn't a project high on his priority list, but he wouldn't pass up the opportunity that presented itself to him.
You can't make me do that!
Fizzy insisted.
Oh, but I can, answered Edward. You're a convicted prisoner. Military service is your sentence.
The gnome's heart sank. Her father always believed artificers could be more than merchants of death, that their craft could be used for the betterment of life, instead of simply ending it. He dedicated his life's work towards that noble goal. All of his research and experiments were simply intended to create devices of convenience and nothing more. And while he did design and build a few weapons, those were only meant as a means of self-defense with the intention to stun and incapacitate, rather than kill. He was no pacifist, but that did not mean he wanted to be a murderer. A naive and foolish ideal that had been hammered into Fizzy since her birth.
Don't worry, said the old man with a rotten smile on his face. I'm sure you'll work off your debt to society after a few decades of hard labor.
He tossed her inside the cell Boxy had been in just a minute ago and shut the door, then walked off after the other guards. Part 3 The Emperor's spymaster walked out of the dungeon and into the courtyard of Erosa's central castle. The ground was hard-packed dirt with not a scrap of vegetation left after being trampled on by countless pairs of feet on a daily basis. He made his way across the open space and went into the 17-meter-tall white stone tower that housed the city's branch of the Arcanium. The Arcanium was a government-controlled guild in charge of magical study and research. Although jobs and skills came prepackaged with their own crafting recipes, enchantments, and spells, that did not mean it was impossible to develop new ones. It was considerably difficult, time-consuming, and expensive, but it was definitely possible. This was the Arcanium's primary function, but by no means the only one. The organization's secondary duty was to investigate, document, and, if necessary, contain and/or dissect the bizarre and illogical. In a way, it was an oddly fitting place for Boxy's upcoming appraisal, as it was clearly an anomalous creature. Initially, the spymaster had foregone analyzing his monstrous prisoner's status because he thought it a waste of time. After all, it was borderline impossible to properly assess a monster's natural job and skills if the one doing the inspection wasn't enlightened. Enlightened was the general term used to collectively refer to the civilized races of this world. The ones that flocked together, hid behind walls and achieved their goals as a species mostly through wits, intelligence, and tools. They had a completely different way of thinking and understanding from the predominantly violent and highly instinctive monsters they shared a world with. It was a gap between their mental states that was impossible to bridge, which was why appraisal, be it basic or full, tended to be mostly useless on monsters. If attempted, the only outcome the appraiser would get was a head filled with garbled gibberish. There was one exception to this, however. If the scribe performing the check was extremely knowledgeable about the monster being appraised, then it was possible to lift the veil on its skills and jobs. The catch was that such a level of understanding could only be achieved after years of study, research, and autopsy of that specific species of monster. Unfortunately, Edward's personal scribe was no scholar, so the most she would normally get out of a monster's status was its HP and MP. Maybe the attribute scores if they were lucky. As it turned out, however, the spymaster's box-shaped prisoner had two enlightened jobs. The interrogation had revealed that it was both a warlock and an artificer, in addition to somehow being involved in the calamity. Hence the reason Edward found himself very eager to find out exactly what the appraisal might reveal. He walked into the Arcanium Tower and went to its basement. This served as a ceremonial chamber used to perform the various rituals and rites the tower's residents required. It was a wide-open space about 10 by 15 meters in size and an abnormally high ceiling almost 4 meters tall. Stone support columns dotted the inside and rows of bookshelves lined the walls. Tomes, parchments, paints, bushels of dried herbs, bowls of powdered substances, chunks of ores, jars of pickled monster parts, and a plethora of other resources, ingredients, and reagents were all lined up and waiting to be put to use. Plain-looking chandeliers adorned with white magical lights dangled from the ceiling, bathing the subterranean chamber with so much light it appeared brighter than the outdoors. The floor itself was covered in dull gray brickwork, almost like the dungeon Edward had just left. A significant part of it was charred, scratched, cracked, or otherwise stained with various dried-up substances, likely remnants of past rituals. The spymaster looked around and spotted a group of 5 individuals in the far corner, huddled around the familiar black cage. He approached them briskly, eager to move his interrogation of the monster to the next step. He'd given the order to prepare this space the instant he realized his prisoner was a warlock, but it took a while to have those wand twirlers vacate the chamber. It would not be an exaggeration to say this was a national security situation, so minimizing potential intelligence leaks was a given. Ideally, he wouldn't have done this in such a relatively public place, but this spot was necessary for what he planned to do.
Sir!
The 4 guards that had escorted the monster there saluted him respectfully when they noticed his approach. He returned the salute.
Thank you, gentlemen. That will be all. Leave us and inform the rest of the Arcanium we are not to be disturbed. Do not let anyone in here unless it is literally a matter of life or death, or else it will become one. Understood?
Yes, sir!
The guardsmen quickly made their way out without uttering another peep. They didn't quite know who this stranger was, but none dared speak up against him. They'd been told he was their superior in both rank and ability, which was all they needed to know. Besides, it was common knowledge around the keep that he had subdued that vicious creature with a single blow. He was far more intimidating in person, though, to the point that a few of them were inwardly questioning which one was the real monster. Edward waited for the men to leave the basement, then turned to face the last person remaining in the chamber. She was a woman with a seemingly average height and build, shoulder-length black hair, and slanted yellow eyes. Her face was mature and attractive, but her ice-cold expression was severe enough to send chills down one spine. Her outfit consisted of an armor set nearly identical in design to Edward's, clearly marking her as one of his subordinates.
Zone, are you ready for the appraisal yet?
He asked matter-of-factly. The woman nodded.
Get to it, then, and give me the short version.
The female operative walked up to the caged monster, which studied her curiously with its out-of-place head. She unlocked the powered-down cage and walked inside. She reached out over its head and placed a hand on its lid, an act which caused Boxy quite a bit of distress. It instinctively wanted to lash out and hurt this woman, but an overpowering glare from that man quickly erased any such rebellious thoughts. Besides, it wasn't like it would hurt, right? Adventurers supposedly did this sort of thing all the time, after all. The woman called Zone opened her mouth and quietly chanted two words.
Full appraisal.
Boxy immediately felt an extremely disturbing sensation, as if countless tiny insects had come out of her hand and spread out across its surface, then burrowed into its faux wood shell. The invisible bugs that weren't actually there enveloped it completely, crawling and tasting it all over. A few seconds later, the woman started reporting on its status in a quiet, monotone voice.
Name, Boxy T. Morningwood. Greater Mimic. 3 months old. HP at 1,524. MP at 1,210. Monster job. Unknown. Assumed level 40 to 50 based on the number of unknowable skills. Level 25 Warlock. Summon Familiar 7. Power Overwhelming 6. Demonology 6. Crystallize Magic 5. Level 12 Artificer. Clockwork Expertise 3. Explosives Handling 2. General skills consist of Stealth 7, an unknowable skill assumed to be Shapeshift, and a total of 6 mastery skills, ranging from 3 to 8.
Having finished her duty, she took her hand off the chest. The disgusting sensations permeating Boxy's body stopped instantly, leaving it with a feeling of somehow being violated. It was not a tasty sensation.
It's quite tough for its level, isn't it? Mused the spymaster. I'm starting to see how it could kill so many guards so quickly. Also, a total of over 75 levels in 3 months? Well, all things considered, that's perhaps even a little low. Zone, is that there?
Yes, Butcher of Humanity perk is present.
So, it was that after all, huh?
The Slayer series of perks were received after killing hundreds upon thousands of beings of the same species. The first rank, known as Slayer, was awarded after one had killed 500 of a specific species. Getting that kill count up to 2,000 would upgrade the perk to Hunter. Racking up 5,000 would turn one into a butcher, and 20,000 would turn them into a natural enemy. However, although these perks did raise one's prowess when fighting a specific species, they also had an additional side effect that was not readily apparent. Much like Taboo, the Slayer series of perks altered the way others perceived the holder, and it grew stronger with each upgrade stage. In this monster's case, humans would feel an instinctive fear that caused them to shy away from it. Edward himself felt it, although it took him a while to notice since his Nerves of Steel skill dulled the effects of external mental influences like that. It wasn't until he had spoken to the creature for a few minutes that he did start feeling an odd sense of unease, followed by beads of cold sweat forming in his palms for no apparent reason. It affected him even though he had reached job level 100 and ranked up to become an Ascendant, a being significantly stronger, faster, and smarter than a regular human. Edward rubbed his temple.
I should have just started with the appraisal, he grumbled.
He felt foolish for thinking it wouldn't yield any useful information. He trusted his common sense and wasted his own time. But it was hardly a bad call. After all, who would have thought this simple creature would be capable of gaining not only one, but two jobs that would normally be inaccessible to such a monster? The Artificer one had clearly been taught by the gnome, which meant the Warlock one was likely taught by some equally naive Warlock trainer. Or a malicious one. Still, after interrogating both its mind and body, he was finally convinced. This creature was the culprit behind the calamity. He wasn't sure how the simple being eluded his eyes of truth earlier, though. Actually, being simple-minded was probably why it gave him so much trouble in the first place. Regardless of its mental faculties, this Boxy was guilty beyond the shadow of a doubt. There was simply no other way it could have killed 5,000 people in just 3 months. Edward was personally familiar with just how high a number that was. He himself was only a Slayer of Humanity and a Slayer of Elfkind, despite having performed assassinations and carrying out raids on criminal hideouts for many decades. That was fine by him, though, as he didn't want to upgrade them, if at all possible. Perks like that were more trouble than they were worth sometimes. In fact, some of them could be almost as damning as a high level of taboo. They were evidence of one's past actions that would be easily laid bare with a full appraisal, regardless of the holder's wishes. And yet he'd held off having one done on this mimic until he deemed it was absolutely necessary. After all, a full appraisal could only be performed once every 24 hours. Guilds could afford to have multiple scribes on their payroll, but Edward could not risk any of this information leaking out. He only brought one subordinate with him who was capable of performing a full appraisal, so he had to be prudent with its usage. And now that it was done, he would take full advantage of it.
Zone, does it have any other perks?
Yes, 5 in total. 1 unknowable, Arcane Assassin, Butcher of Humanity, Collateral Damage, and Grand Theft Arcana.
Wait, no Hero Killer?
Negative.
The perk in question had no effects beyond marking someone as taking part in slaying a chosen of the gods. It was one of those troublesome stigmas on one's status that could be used as evidence to get them convicted of manslaughter on the spot. This monster not having it was surprising, though. Then again, Bernard Sampson, the chosen hero of Teresa, had supposedly been revived by the goddess almost instantly, so it was possible the perk was invalidated or the kill didn't count. Edward had never heard of the divines outright reviving a person like that, so it was hard for him to accurately say one way or the other. Rather than dwell on what was missing, the spymaster considered what was already there. The perk that Zone referred to as unknowable was likely something exclusive to monsters, or she would have recognized it. Collateral damage was to be expected of something that blew up an entire city. Arcane Assassin was something one of his other subordinates possessed, and that perk made sense, considering the mimic was a warlock with stealth. It was likewise possible that one of its unreadable skills was the assassination skill, which Edward also had as part of his rogue job. Unfortunately, even if this creature had the same ability, it would have come from its monster job and would be incomprehensible to a meathead like Zone. However, it was the last perk in that list that piqued his interest the most.
Grand Theft Arcana?
He asked, raising an eyebrow. Zone's eyes stared off into the distance as she focused her attention on Boxy's status screen that was still in her mind.
Awarded for taking a dungeon core out of its dungeon,
she reported in the same dull monotone.
Reward is a +10 to all attributes. The subject has performed this feat once.
Such a thing can happen, huh? I see. So that's what it was.
When the hero, Bernard Sampson, described the giant orb thought to be the source of the calamity, it painted the image of an oversized dungeon core. Edward was no expert on the matter, but general knowledge dictated that the size of those things was directly proportional to the amount of mystical energy they controlled. Therein lay the problem, though, as the Lidigar dungeon complex next to Monatol, which would be the most likely origin of said core, was much too weak to produce one of that size. The place had completely caved in from the blast and was within range of the ever-swirling death cloud, so there was no way to verify if its core was still there. At least until this monster's status had given Edward all the confirmation he needed. Not that Boxy had any idea that its deed had been exposed. It was still immensely nervous, however. It had just been through its first and highly unpleasant appraisal, the thing that it had determined must be avoided at all costs. It was afraid of what would happen to it, of whether this terrifying human and that similarly dressed woman would just kill it off on the spot. Still, it held on to a feeling vaguely resembling hope. They clearly wanted something from it, or they would have eliminated it already. It was the same reasoning the mimic itself had used when it tried to run away with that gnome in tow.
Interesting, Edward mused as he tapped his chin. Very interesting indeed. We'll have to bring it back to headquarters so Hook can extract the details from it. We might even be able to avoid asking Arcanium for assistance.
It seemed Boxy was right in assuming its life would be spared, at least for the moment. If they were transporting it somewhere else, then that could present it with a good opportunity to escape.
In the meantime, let's make sure it doesn't try to pull anything too clever. Zone, get rid of those two jobs.
The mimic's head swiveled around to look up at the black-haired woman standing next to it with a panicked stare. Get rid of jobs? Was such a thing really possible?
What if the warlock job is necessary?
She asked.
Irrelevant. We just need its memory. Do it.
Judging from their exchange and the mechanical way that woman was moving her hands towards it, Boxy quickly concluded that its jobs were indeed in danger. It felt a type of fear distinctly different than that of death. It was something it hadn't felt since its connection to its home dungeon was severed. The fear of the unknown. That wasn't all, though. It also felt anger. Rage, even. How dare these damned humans attempt to separate it from what was rightfully its own? Did they even know how much time, effort, money, and murder it had to go through to get those jobs to their current state? Desperate and cornered, it lashed out. A dozen fleshy tendrils sprang forth from its surface and wrapped around the woman's hands, feet, and neck. Now that it had hold of a hostage, it just needed to...
Hmm!
It groaned.
Eh?
It tried to spin her around, pin her down, and threaten her, but it couldn't. She didn't budge a muscle no matter how much it pulled on her limbs. In fact, if anyone was getting pulled in this situation, it was the mimic whose suspended body leaned closer towards Zone. The monster should have been the heavier one, yet Boxy felt as if it was trying to pull down a mountain. At the unexpected assault, Zone had briefly stopped her movements, but she did not appear to mind the interruption. No, that wasn't quite right. The unfazed way she carried on despite the shapeshifter's utmost effort made it seem like she didn't even register its attempts at taking her hostage. As if this monster's full strength was little more than a bad joke to her. That may actually have been the case, given the tiny smile on her normally expressionless face. In the end, she placed her hand upon the chest once more, completely unhindered by its attempts at restraining her.
Job removal. Warlock.
A trio of previously inert runes etched into the stone floor under the cage lit up in response to her quiet words. A white light flowed forth from them and enveloped Boxy, drowning out the creature's senses and assaulting its consciousness. Proficiency level decreased. Crystallized magic is no longer available. Intelligence -10. Wisdom -10. Proficiency level decreased. Demonology is now level 5. Wisdom -2. Mental fortitude -2. Proficiency level decreased. Power overwhelming is no longer available. Intelligence -24. Proficiency level decreased. Summon familiar is no longer available. Intelligence -14. Wisdom -7. Mental fortitude -7. Your warlock job has been removed. Intelligence -50. Mental fortitude -50. Endurance -50. It was over in an instant. The stress of having its skills and attributes removed all at once rendered the monster unconscious. Its tendrils uncoiled themselves from Zone and hung limply down to the ground. The next time it woke up, it would find that all the knowledge it had regarding magic and demons was now gone, obliterated from its mind as if it was never there. Well, almost all of it.
Odd,
said Zone.
Demonology won't go below level 5.
What? Why not?
Edward asked.
Unknown.
But the warlock job and its other skills were successfully removed?
Yes.
Edward had made sure to brush up on his knowledge of warlocks and their familiars ever since he heard demons were involved in the Monotol case. As such, he was familiar with the summon familiar and demonology skills and had already deduced his monstrous prisoner was in possession of them during the interview. Exactly why the second of those refused to go away completely was beyond his understanding. But it wasn't necessarily an issue.
It's good enough,
he stated.
Demonology is practically useless on its own anyway.
The monster would probably retain some knowledge pertaining to demonic rituals and lore, but the skill's main function was to upgrade Summon Familiar, which was no longer in its possession. Not only did it now lack the means to call out its pet demons, but their contracts would be severed as well.
"Do the next one," he commanded,
and Zone complied.
Job removal. Artificer.
Proficiency level decreased. Explosives handling is no longer available. Dexterity -4. Wisdom -4. Proficiency level decreased. Clockwork expertise is no longer available. Dexterity -6. Perception -6. Your artificer job has been removed. Dexterity -24. Wisdom -24. Perception -24. More untasty notifications flashed inside the mimic's mind, but its owner was currently out for the count.
Done. No abnormalities, Zone reported.
Good,
said Edward, while staring absent-mindedly at the unconscious monster.
Very good indeed. Looks like we're done here.
Zone tilted her head.
We are? What about the elf connection?
Non-existent. As expected, this entire incident was either a fluke or an accident rather than an elven conspiracy.
Of course, the spymaster never quite believed those knife ears were actually responsible for something like the calamity of Monotol. He'd kept his mind open to the possibility, but a man of his experience was able to easily sense that the young hero had been deceived. And while it certainly helped that he caught and spoke with the real perpetrator, he really didn't need to do that in order to doubt the young man's words. The testimony still served to pin the blame on the twig-infested nation to the north, but that was a bit divorced from reality. To begin with, the cowards of the Ishigar Republic to the north would never dare incur the wrath of the Lodrak Empire. Their territory may have been larger than the Empire's at a glance, but they were far behind when it came to matters of military strength. And while such acts of terrorism were right up their alley, they were far too competent to be responsible for the farce at Monotol. If an agent of theirs was indeed responsible for the calamity, then there was no way they'd ever allow it to be traced back to them. Elves took their spying and skulking in the shadows very seriously. Then there was the matter of these supposed perpetrators' choice of target. Considering the destructive power of the calamity, hitting a place like Monotol made very little sense. That city had very little strategic or economic value in the grand scheme of things. If they truly had the capability and the intention of wounding the Empire in such a way, then the Republic would have gone after a more valuable region. It made a lot more sense to blow up the royal capital and gouge out the heart of the Empire. It was what Edward would have done in their position. In fact, that was more or less what he was planning to do to the Republic at this very moment.
Sir, requesting permission to keep suspect as a pet.
His subordinate's bizarre question made Edward's scheming grind to a halt. The black-haired woman was gently stroking the unconscious mimic's imitation wood surface with a tiny smile on her face.
Really, Zone? This again?
Affirmative.
Ha. All right, I'll bite. Why?
I have determined it is quite cute.
So it was that, after all. This problem child always had a twisted sense of aesthetics. It wasn't the first time she'd made the ludicrous request to keep a murderous monster around as a pet. Normally he might consider it if Zone was a monster tamer like her colleague with the codename Bandit, but she wasn't.
Also, there is a high chance that it likes me,
she added.
I highly doubt that. It just tried to take you hostage. That's not something you normally do to people you like.
It did? When?
You know, when it wrapped those tentacles around you.
He wiggled his fingers for emphasis, causing his subordinate to blink her yellow eyes in confusion.
That wasn't a hug? But it was so squishy and warm.
Edward sighed. Did she really not notice? While it was true that the monster had no chance of overpowering her outrageous strength attribute, that didn't mean it was being nice. Honestly, how come she was this ignorant even though she was also a ranker like him? It boggled the mind how dense this woman could be sometimes.
No, Zone, It wasn't showing affection. It tried to hurt you.
I don't mind. I promise I'll discipline it, therefore—
Forget it. We'll be disposing of that thing once Hook is done rooting around in its mind for the Calamity Method.
The man with the codename Hook was another subordinate of Edward's. His primary job was a psionic, a rare occupation from the southern continent that utilized mind-based skills and spells in combat. Their domination magic was powerful and versatile, easily dwarfing a warlock's potential for mind-fuckery. The task of sifting through the monster's memories to get details surrounding the Calamity was child's play for a psionic of Hook's caliber. Granted, such forceful methods usually left the subject a drooling vegetable, but Edward was going to execute the thing once he was done with it anyway. His female colleague should have known all this, yet she kept staring expectantly at him.
"Don't give me that pleading look, Zone. You know we can't risk the truth of the Calamity leaking out."
The elves destroyed a human city and murdered thousands of humans. This was the official story he'd fed to the immature and hot-blooded Emperor. It wouldn't be long before that lie was propagated throughout the Empire and spoon-fed to its citizens. With the entire country's disdain and distrust towards the elves rising, it would be the perfect opportunity to finally engage in open warfare and wipe those twigs off the face of this world. Once that was over, the Empire would be in a position to gobble up or vassalize the remaining nations, securing its dominion over the continent. Some small part of Edward actually wanted to thank that moronic mimic. Not only did it inadvertently give his country a plausible reason to get the populace to support this war, but it was also going to provide them with a weapon of mass destruction. If the Calamity could be replicated and weaponized, then even world domination would be within the Empire's grasp. Or at least, that was the way he would manipulate that juvenile of an emperor into seeing things. As far as Edward was concerned, all these wars on the horizon were nothing more than a way for him to further his jobs and skills. He was so close to achieving a second rank up that he could almost taste it, but a man of his position found it difficult to raise the spy job and its related skills during such peaceful times. He was so close to a breakthrough, and then he just had to diligently work at becoming a level 100 spy, at which point he would achieve his second rank up. Of course, one could argue he should have picked an easier job to level up, but being a spy gave him benefits beyond skills and attributes. To begin with, the job was a closely guarded secret of the very elves he would use it against. He had no time for such things. Being able to steal it away from them decades ago was what allowed him to become spymaster in the first place. It was a position of power with many benefits, such as first-rate equipment and information, not to mention the freedom to act as he saw fit. There was also the benefit that, strictly speaking, spy was not a combat-oriented job. It still gained some XP from murdering the ever-living piss out of stuff, but it was the act of infiltration and subterfuge that made it go up in level to any significant extent. The need and opportunity for such acts would increase tremendously during open warfare, as well as during the months leading up to the official start of the campaign. Hopefully enough to allow the spymaster to obtain his second level 100 job. This was Edward's primary concern, as he was running short on time. Even if his lifespan may have been extended after he ranked up into an ascendant, he was already over a century old. His body and mind were both in good enough condition to allow him to remain on active duty, but his time until forced retirement and subsequent death was rapidly running out. However, once he achieved his goals and maxed out his second job, he would be allowed to rank up once more. At that point, he would not only gain another ultimate skill, but would also evolve into an immortal being that no longer had to fear the passage of time. After that, he would have literally all the time in the world to work on achieving the mythical third and final rank up an enlightened could attain. Until then, however, he had to be prudent, patient, and careful.
"Now go fetch those guardsmen and tell them to drag our friend back to its cell," he ordered. "Prepare both it and the gnome for transport back to the capital. I want them out of here by tomorrow."
Part 4
"Teach!
demanded Boxy.
No!
Replied Fizzy in a shrill voice.
Don't wanna! Go away!
I want to, but cage!
The mimic swayed front to back while suspended inside its special cage as if to make a point. Not too hard, though. The highly untasty, zappy stuff was back, and it didn't want any part of that. Boxy had been in a rage ever since it woke up half an hour ago and found itself back in the cell minus two jobs. It was still coming to terms with its more limited brain capacity. After all, it had lost about a third of its intelligence and a good chunk of wisdom. Its mental processes had regressed back to what they were 3 weeks ago, just after the calamity that started this whole mess. And it did not like that. Not one bit.
Teach!
Yelled Zira's misplaced head again. It wanted to reclaim what it once had. The warlock job? It had no idea where it would get that. The first time was a total lucky fluke. It was highly unlikely for that to happen again. At least Artificer could be recovered easily enough as long as that insufferable gnome granted it the job again.
Please, just leave me alone!
She was, understandably, not especially willing to do so. Fizzy hadn't had the chance to come to terms with the horrible reality of her unjust imprisonment before those guards came back and left this terrifying box in the same cell with her. She begged them to put her in a different place, but the humans just stared at each other awkwardly before locking them in together and walking away. A man bearing His Majesty's royal seal had given them an order, and they carried it out. Nothing more, nothing less. Even though all of them sympathized with her, none of them were willing to risk incurring the wrath of someone who wielded the Emperor's authority. Roared the mimic.
Shut up!
Snapped Fizzy.
Shut up, shut up, shut up!
No! Teach me Art Fisher!
Idiot! No!
Now, why had Fizzy gone and kicked the cage? She knew full well it was electrified. Maybe the real idiot was her, after all.
Okay, look!
The gnome decided it would probably be better to just explain, so she lifted her bound arms for emphasis.
You see these things? These are mana-sealing shackles, you dimwit! Not only do they drain your MP, but they also disable its recovery. And I can't activate my mentor skill without MP. Therefore, I can't give you the job, even if I wanted to. Which, big surprise, I don't.
You lie! Betrayer! Liar! Untasty, nasty thing!
You have the same stuff bolted onto you, moron! You don't have your MP either, right?
No.
So if you understand, then please just shut the fuck up!
And it did indeed go silent. The gnome stared at it, her small shoulders going up and down as she steadied her agitated breathing. She really should have just said that stuff at the start. Boxy was always good at listening to her, so it wouldn't ask again once it had no choice but to accept her words. Alas, once the gnome finally calmed herself down, she was instead gripped by anxiety and uncertainty. She had just yelled at and insulted a monster that could gobble her up in one mouthful. That realization was more than enough to cause her to back off into the far corner of the cell and lay down in the fetal position, facing away from her cellmate. At least this arrangement was entirely temporary. Those guards said something about moving both of them the next day, so all she had to do was grin and bear it until they were separated. And then continue grinning and bearing it. For years, while she was forced to build war machines, and would likely be whipped and beaten if she did a poor job of it. That was only if she was lucky. If not, then she would probably be whipped and beaten regardless of how well she did. Would they even release her once her sentence was up? Would that sentence even end? Or was death the only thing that would set her free?
How fast?
Fizzy looked over her shoulder at those words. The mimic had regained its composure and was asking her something with a determined face. Granted, it was the borrowed face of its once familiar, but it was a determined one nonetheless.
How fast what?
answered Fizzy, despite herself.
How fast does MP go away?
What does it matter?
How fast? It repeated.
Why should I tell you?
Talk is free. Nothing to lose.
The monster had a point, but communicating with it any more than this was ill-advised. Yet she couldn't just sit there quietly. The mentor inside her still wanted to answer the student. More importantly than that, though, if she didn't speak up now, that stupid box would probably start shouting like a spoiled child all over again. If Fizzy was going to wallow in her own misery, then it would be better if she did so without having a horrible creature screaming at her.
I think it was 50 per second or something like that.
The room fell completely silent after that. The pale-faced head retreated back inside its shell, leaving the monster's appearance as that of a simple, suspended chest. It appeared to have no more desire to speak with her, and Fizzy was more than happy to oblige. Conversation was the last thing she was looking for right now. Okay, that wasn't entirely true. She desperately wanted someone to at least hear out her troubles, but she wasn't going to get a shred of sympathy from that thing. Monsters were wholly incapable of empathy, after all. Why did she have to share a cell with this horrible creature that had caused her so much pain? First, it... Huh? She sat up and looked at it curiously. Did it actually do anything to her? No, no, no. Boxy had clearly stated it was responsible for the death of her father and brother. That was more than enough reason to hate it, right? Wait. That wasn't right. During the interrogation, it mentioned being at the scene of their deaths, but it claimed it didn't kill them. It merely... ate them. Still, desecrating the dead like that was surely deserving of scorn, right? But it had also gone on a murdering spree and wiped out both the bandits that killed her family and the adventurers that failed to protect them, as well as that shady bastard who lured them away in the first place. Looking at things objectively, didn't Boxy avenge their deaths? Anyone and everyone who could be held responsible for her father and brother's untimely demise was sitting somewhere at the bottom of that monster's gullet. Or at least, that was what it claimed. But if that scary government spy was willing to believe its claims, then nobody would blame Fizzy for doing the same, right?
Ah!
She screamed and rolled around on the ground. What was she thinking? There was no way that monster had acted out of anything other than self-interest. It would have definitely killed her family if the bandits hadn't gotten to them first. Regardless of that, it also killed and ate people. It had a lot of crimes to answer for, to be sure, especially for all those times it messed with her head. Come to think of it, why did it do that? To protect its identity? If it was just that, then shouldn't it have been easier to kill her? If Fizzy had simply talked to it rather than betrayed it, then wasn't there a chance they could be practicing their craft in her workshop right now instead of sitting in a jail cell awaiting some dismal fate? Maybe, just maybe, if she hadn't forced it to defend itself, then none of this would have happened. From what she was able to gather, it had even tried to carry her away from all that madness. The more the confused gnome thought about it while curled up on that hard, damp floor, the less Boxy seemed like a villain to her. For one thing, it had given her heaps of business. Fizzy's Fidgety Widgets was never a prosperous shop, and the unfortunate gnome was struggling to keep it afloat all on her own. The vast majority of her clients had canceled their orders once they found out her father and brother were no more, so she'd really been in a pinch about how to maintain her father's legacy.
Boxy, can I ask you something?
The mimic was currently trying to organize its fractured mind, so it didn't feel like engaging with the pink thing in the corner. All the information pertaining to magic and almost everything it knew about demons had vanished in a flash of light, along with its knowledge of cogwheels, gears, sprockets, springs, and explosives. No, wait. It wasn't all gone. Those one-on-one tutoring sessions with Fizzy were still in the back of its mind. The conversations with Carl and most of the memories it had concerning its familiars were still there. The information Zira had gathered for it before it got captured was mostly intact as well. Perhaps it could recover from this after all?
Why did you want to become an artificer?
Asked Fizzy. She had taken the monster's lack of response for silent confirmation it would speak with her, when in truth it wasn't paying attention to her at all. If it could magnificently ignore a couple of demons having violent sex for hours on end, then some nosy little gnome was no trouble at all. But still, perhaps there was some merit in speaking with her. It was possible she would yield some more useful information, and the mimic would need all the help it could get if it was to break out of this place. And if not, then it wouldn't have lost anything. In its own words, talking was free. Zira's bald face emerged from the chest's front. The gnome didn't even flinch at the bizarre action, though she was a tiny bit surprised she was already used to it.
"Machines are tasty," it said simply.
"What?"
"Machines are tasty."
"You eat artificer-made tools?"
"No."
"But you think they're tasty?"
"Yes."
"How can you claim they're tasty when you don't want to eat them?"
"Because they are."
"What's with that inane reasoning?"
"You don't think art fishes are tasty?"
No.
"Then why teach art fishing if you don't think it's tasty?"
The gnome decided it would be better for everyone involved if she just minded her own business after all. She lay down in the fetal position once again, but with one small change. This time she lay facing the mimic so she could quietly stare at it. Boxy didn't seem to mirror that sentiment and returned to its mental cataloging after making its head disappear. The cell remained silent for the rest of the day and evening, save for the footsteps of the odd guard patrol, Fizzy's own breathing, and the gentle hum of the electrified cage. The mentally exhausted gnome ended up focusing on that last one. It was a nostalgic sound, for she was the one who built the thing over 6 months ago at the behest of the local Lord Mayor. She never found out why he wanted an electrified cage, nor did she want